Hello, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Steve, and we are on our last day of this month's Newsworthy Clips. We're so glad you've joined us. We thank you for joining us. We know you have many choices when it comes to learning English and increasing your vocabulary, and we thank you for joining us here. If you remember yesterday, we really, really challenged you to increase your vocabulary with some difficult words. Words that you might just meet once or twice in your life, but still fun to learn and get acquainted with, as we talked about bacteria that can eat plastic bottles. And with us today, again, is Lois. Welcome back, Lois.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here. We seem to be learning a lot these days.
This month, I'm telling you what, I don't think I've had such a challenge with these words as I have this month in Newsworthy Clips, so it's been a good challenge. And also in the studio is Ruth. Welcome back, Ruth.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here. And some of these words I see written in print, but I never think about how to say them.
Yeah, and there is a big difference, isn't there, between a written language and a spoken language. And written language is so much more formal, and there are words that we would never attempt to say or speak out, but we have to do that
exactly
over the radio for our friends. And it's a good challenge, as I said. All right, let's talk about yesterday just really quickly. If there's a point we can summarize for our friends just joining us today. Lois, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, yesterday was interesting because it's something that we probably don't think about too often, if we ever have thought about it before. But the fact that there is bacteria that can eat plastic bottles. So I'm like thinking, okay, like little wee microscopic buggies?
Microbes.
Microbes. You know, I'm just thinking, wow, this is incredible. And whoever saw them in the first place,
right,
and just realizing that only a microscope can pick them up and see what's happening, and that this is provided to actually do something like this. And in a day where, you know, we've been decades now, I guess, with plastic bottles, haven't we?
Sure.
It's been a long time since people took back their glass bottles, whether they be pop bottles or milk bottles. So it's something that we all think about. What are they doing with all this plastic?
Yeah, yeah. What you said brought up a point that I thought of. There are a lot of people that would be freaked out if they really knew about all the microbes even on their body right now, right?
Yes.
And you learn about that, and there's thousands and thousands of microbes on your skin, eating your skin as you listen to this.
On your bed sheets, on your pillowcases, on your towels. Yes.
Okay, I'm freaked out.
They're everywhere. Microbes are everywhere. And they're, usually we think of them eating organic things,
yes,
right? Organic things, but
yes,
we plastic bottles are not organic. They're made of oils and natural gases and things like that. But they do exist. These microbes do exist. So that's good news. Okay, Ruth, what point would you like to summarize?
Well, I like the word notoriously, and one of the reasons that we're so excited about this bacterium is because this PET, this kind of plastic, has been notoriously resistant to being broken down. And now they seem to have discovered a way to break it down.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Because again, as we mentioned yesterday, there are millions of tons of plastic being produced every year. And where does it all go? Only a small portion of it gets recycled, and so hopefully some of these microbes can take care of the rest. All right, let's go to today's lesson now. We're on page 24, and let's talk about our brain for a second. There's a picture of it, of a brain, not your brain, on page 24, and it's so identifiable. I mean, instantly we recognize this as a brain. What is it about how it looks that makes it so interesting to?
Well, I think we always think of a brain as having all these different little folds and curves in it, and it's just a totally unique structure. I mean, usually you think of something as being totally smooth, but this has so many cracks and crevices and curves in it.
You take it apart and it almost looks like a jigsaw puzzle with some strange shapes to it, and it all fits together And we call those things folds, right? And there's some other scientific words we'll discover today. But it looks really, really creepy to some people, doesn't it?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to think they looked like it had curly cues on it. I don't know. It always looked like it was the brain had some, like, curls pressed into it or something. You're right, Steve. It didn't look like anything else on the body or in the body that I knew of. And it always looked like it had... Like, it wasn't smooth, it had waves, and it was just so different.
Yeah. We're going to find out today that there's one or maybe more reasons why the brain looks like that, was created that way, designed like that. So this will be a fun article. We hope you have your advanced magazines with you. If you do, please turn to page 24, and let's start learning about scientists' 3D print a brain. To learn the secret behind its folds.
Scientists 3D print a brain to learn the secret behind its folds. By 3D printing a fake gel brain and watching it grow, scientists at Harvard University have discovered how the human cortex develops its creepy classic folds. The discovery, published in the journal Nature Physics, may solve a long-standing mystery about the structure of our gray matter and could even help shed light on certain disorders that may be linked to underfolding or overfolding of the brain. Alan Kuhl of Stanford University, who was not involved in the study, wrote in a commentary, "Their findings could have far-reaching clinical consequences for diagnosing, treating, and preventing a wide variety of neurological disorders."
Okay, the dawn of 3D printing has enabled us to do a lot of amazing things and to create a lot of amazing things. I never thought I would see the day where people would use 3D printers to make a replica of the human brain. But that day is here.
Yeah.
And it's helping us.
Yeah.
It's helping us to understand the brain more.
Right. I'm sure a lot of people have wondered why the brain has these little cracks and curls in it, why it isn't just smooth. And this is one way that scientists could help discover the reason.
That's right. We find that there are scientists at Harvard University in the United States. They have discovered how the human cortex develops. Oh, there's the word, creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy, classic folds. They're instantly identifiable.
And many of our readers would have heard that word before, Steve. Cortex, in our specialized terms, it's located the outer layer of our brain.
Yes. Okay, so there's a few C words there. Cortex, creepy, and classic, all describing the brain, the outer part of the brain. And the discovery published in the journal Nature may solve a long-standing mystery. And as you alluded to earlier, Ruth, the mystery is why? Why this? Why does it look like that? Why is there like that half cut almost down the middle of the brain there? You see that towards the left. And why all the creepy folds?
Right. And this is a long-standing mystery. That's, again, one of our vocabulary focus words, meaning that it's been around a long time. This has been something that people have wondered about for a long time.
That's right. And through this study, maybe scientists can learn some things about certain disorders of the brain. And that may be linked to underfolding or overfolding of the brain. We're going to talk about the word fold quite a few times today. So sometimes I don't really know how to describe those things. You call them curlies or the folding, the crevices.
And yeah.
I don't really know how to...
The bumps.
The bumps.
Yeah.
Ruth, you described it earlier, and I like the way you said it.
Well, there's folds, there's like crevices, there's rounded parts. It is hard to describe. Maybe we should just call it folds. That's easy.
Okay.
But you know, Steve, I like the way they refer to the brain here, too, by gray matter. Because you hear that sometimes,
yes,
too, when you think about your gray cells or your gray matter. And it just means your brain.
Yes. Good point. And sometimes we refer informally to our brains as gray matter. All right. Line 16, Lois, would you please take us into the next paragraph?
Right. It says that Ellen Kuhl of Stanford University, who was not involved in the study, wrote in a commentary, "Their findings could have far-reaching clinical consequences for diagnosing, treating, and preventing a wide variety of neurological disorders."
Okay, so this 3D model that they've made is going to be very helpful. Maybe they can learn some things about it to help diagnose. Let's talk about this word first, diagnose. Ruth, help us with that.
All right, when you diagnose something is you discover the reason, you discover a problem and then some of the reasons that that problem exists.
Yeah, if you have a sickness and you go to the doctor and the doctor can't figure it out, that's troublesome, mm-hmm. right? The doctor can't diagnose. He doesn't know exactly what the problem is. But it's almost a relief if you're sick for a long time and the doctor finally diagnoses it and says, it's this. Then you can move on with a treatment.
Right. And then if you take the word diagnose to make it a noun, you say the diagnosis. So when you go and you find out what your problem is, you can say, oh, I have a diagnosis. I know what's wrong with me.
Yes. And as I said, the next step, as in the article, is treatment or treating the disorder. And then thirdly, preventing a wide variety of other disorders related to the brain. So, Ellen Kuhl says, this is good. This is good. It could lead to some very, very helpful things in the scientific community.
Right. It could be far-reaching, meaning that it's going to affect a lot of things that they can't even really think about now because they're in the future. They're not exactly closely related, but they will be.
This is such a mysterious part of our body, isn't it?
Well,
it's like the seat of our emotions.
Well, yeah.
All of our senses go up to this, and we know so little about it.
Yeah. You know, it's also something when we think of the brain, you know, we can't help if we hear about a brain injury or some discovery with the brain, or we learn a secret behind its folds, as this says. We can't help but think of a brain surgeon, right? And for many of us, that would be like the ultimate job to revere. Because it's like, you do that for a living? You work on people's brains? Because still to this day, we hardly know anything about the brain. You know, we look at a picture here on page 24, and most of us go, yeah, that's about all I know about the brain. I can identify it. And we know it's neurological. We know it's nerves. It's connected. And if it's not working properly, that something else happens in our body. So it's just so incredible, and obviously we can't be without it, and obviously the more we learn about it, the more we can find out about diseases of the brain.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully these models, these 3D models, will lead to some great, great discoveries about diagnosing, treating, and preventing neurological disorders. Let's go to the next reading now, friends. We'll pick it up on line 21.
Scientists have long known that the brain's folded structure actually has some major benefits. It allows for far more connectivity than a smooth surface would. But what causes these folds to develop has had scientists a little stumped. Researchers built a physical model with some clever use of materials. They use magnetic resonance imagery, MRI, from a smooth fetal brain at 22 weeks gestation, and 3D printed a cast to make a fake brain out of gel. The researchers then submerged the brain in a liquid solvent that caused that stretchy cortex-like layer to start growing. Sure enough, unnervingly, brain-like folds began to emerge in the once smooth surface.
All right, friends, those folds, those curves and the crevices in our brains, they actually have benefits. So we do know this much, and the author says it allows for far more connectivity than a smooth surface would. I would not have thought that at all.
That wouldn't have been what I thought either. But again, it makes sense because when you add curves or grooves, that puts more tissue in close contact with itself rather than just being totally smooth like a soccer ball.
I'm thinking of wires. Like, you don't need crevices. I just find it very, very interesting that the scientists came to that conclusion, but I guess I could see how that would work.
I always try to think of it more as, I don't know, this works for me when I think of the brain, like a highway with all this spaghetti, but it still gets you to places, and it's still all connected, and you won't be getting off a ramp and then just get into a mud pile or a river, and it's kind of like that with the brain. It works, and you're not going to drive off. The brain isn't going to just disappear or drive off, or I don't know.
I love your analogy, Lois. Where did you learn that?
I don't know. I think myself.
Our brain is a bowl of spaghetti.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It kind of reminded me of highways that almost look like spaghetti, you know?
I hear you. Like, there's connectivity going on all throughout our brain, and, like, that's kind of what I was referring to earlier, mm-hmm. actually, with the wires. You know, it's just a bunch of wires, and each one's connected to something, and there's always something going on. It's just amazing.
And there's no wire left unattended. You know, it's just like a highway when it's finished. There's no ramps or roads or whatever left unattended. They have a place to go, and I think of that.
It's connected to something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but what causes these folds to develop has had scientists a little stumped. Okay, let's look at this word stump for a second. Lois, would you like to tackle this for me?
Sure. We're not thinking tree stump here, folks. We're thinking about stumped is to be unable to answer a question or solve a problem because it is too difficult. So sometimes I know for me, sometimes I'm working on something in a house or an apartment. I'm trying to fix it on my own before I ask my husband. And I go, oh, I'm stumped. I've gone as far as I can with my ability and my knowledge.
And Steve, you know, we talked earlier about written formal English versus spoken English. And this is more of an informal word that you will hear people speak more often than you'll see it written. It makes me think of when someone asks me a riddle. And then if I can't think of the answer, oh, I'm stumped.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Say that. You can respond that way. Say, I'm stumped. In other words, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And sometimes children will ask adults very deep, difficult questions, right? And they will stump you with their questions. You're stumped by the child's question. Well, scientists have been stumped for many, many years about the folds in a human brain. Now we're going to get, friends, into the very interesting part, in my mind at least. Researchers built a physical model with the help of a 3D printer with some clever use of materials. What did they use, Ruth?
Well, they used, first of all, a magnetic resonance imagery. In other words, they took a picture of a fetal brain when it was smooth at 22 weeks gestation. That means the baby had been in the mother's womb for just 22 weeks. The brain at that point was smooth. And then they made a cast to make a fake brain out of gel, like Jell-O.
That's amazing to me. So they needed that MRI not just to see the outside of the brain, but everything inside. Because what's on the inside is going to affect what's going to happen on the outside. And so they used the MRI, and then they plugged that into a 3D printer and cast a fake human brain.
Really kind of makes you wonder, what did they do before the MRI? That's what I was thinking. Like, before there were MRIs to see inside our brain.
Mm.
Not just inside our skull, inside our brain.
Well, that's probably why we've had so many long-standing questions, is because we haven't had the tools, like an MRI, to be able to figure them out.
Right. I think we would not even have thought of this 5-10 years ago, before the 3D printer became so popular. I think that really helps this as well. And the researchers then submerged this brain, this model, into a liquid solvent that caused that stretchy cortex-like layer to start growing. So the solvent is a liquid in which solids will dissolve, and maybe it's a salty solvent? What's the word I'm looking for?
It depends on what you're dissolving, what the solvent could be. For example, water can be a solvent for something like salt. But vinegar is another kind of solvent or even a stronger chemical, too.
Right. You'll hear mechanics talk about stick that in the solvent. Now, they're talking about something they want to, maybe a tool they want to get stuff off of because it's got gummed up from what they're working okay. under a vehicle with. So the solvent they're using, as Ruth says, is a very strong chemical.
Okay.
And you actually can't put your hand in unless you put gloves on.
Okay. Sometimes there are strong solvents that will harm your skin if you touch them. So, sure enough, unnervingly brain-like folds began to emerge. Can you imagine being in this lab as a scientist? You've just dropped this jelly brain into the solvent, and then you're starting to see, as it absorbs some of this, these folds start to appear on the outside. And I like the author says, unnervingly brain-like folds. Again, there's that idea that this is kind of creepy.
Yeah, there goes those curly cues again. Yeah. They're kind of freaking me out.
Right, and it's unnerving because it's something that you kind of expected to happen, but you really didn't expect it. And when it does, you're kind of surprised in a kind of a creepy way.
Yeah.
It really does have remind us all here of sci-fi movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe Frankenstein.
Something like that.
So again, the brain was once smooth, and that's important to remember because at 22 weeks, a human brain is smooth, okay, and that's how it is. But these folds, over time, they develop, and they're essential to the human development of the rest of the body. So let's stop here and go to our final reading. We'll pick it up on line 6.
Here's what seems to be happening. The cortical tissue wants to keep growing, but it's anchored to the limited real estate of the white matter below it. As the cortex expands, that strain eventually causes the tissue to collapse, leading to the gyri, round features, and the sulci, deep grooves that cover the surface. The next step, Lakshman Arayanan Mahavadevan, a physicist and applied mathematician at Harvard University, says, is to link these large-scale structural predictions to the process that may be contributing on a molecular level. Ultimately, the research could help researchers better understand a variety of different neurological disorders, scientists said.
All right, friends, if you're just joining us, once again, we're in our Advanced Studio magazines. We're on page 24 talking about a 3D printout of a brain. So cool. And why these folds develop. And finally, in this part of the lesson, we're finally figuring out what seems to be happening. Ruth, what seems to be happening?
Well, we talked about the fact that the outside layer of the brain is called the cortex. And if you take that noun, cortex, and you change it into an adjective, you come up with cortical, which we see here on line 6. So the cortical tissue, this outside layer of the brain, wants to keep growing, but because it's stuck to or anchored to the tissue below it, it can't grow, so therefore it starts to fold.
Okay, and the cortex expands, and it's that strain that eventually causes the tissue to collapse, leading to these folds, round features, deep grooves.
And I want to hear you say the words, Steve.
Okay.
You taught me, Steve. Come on.
All right, here we go. There's some scientific words here. Here's how we pronounce them. The first one is gyri, which are the round features, and the second one is sulci, are the deep grooves that cover the surface of the brain. So now you can impress your friends with these words at the next party you go to, and that's why it happens. And we found through this process of developing a 3D brain, putting it in the solvent, that the brain wants to continue to expand, and this is part of the process.
Can we go back to line 8 there for a minute, Steve? Mm-hmm. It says it's anchored to the limited real estate of the white matter below.
Okay.
And some of our readers may wonder, why are we talking about real estate? Mm-hmm. We're talking about the brain. And it just means that the amount of space that's available. Sometimes we talk about space or available land as real estate. So because the white matter is so limited in space, it's not going to grow. It's going to stay the same. Therefore, it's the cortex is going to, there's going to be a strain which causes the tissue to collapse, creating these gyri and sulci.
Okay, thank you. And what just came to my mind is limited real estate in a big city. There's limited real estate, so builders will build up.
Yes.
They can't build out, so they'll build up because of the limited real estate. All right, next paragraph, we meet this man. I'm going to say Mr. Mahadevan. Yeah, I said it right.
Mahadevan.
He's a physicist in Harvard, and he says, the next step is to link these large-scale structural predictions to the process that may be contributing on a molecular level.
That sounds just like a physicist.
I have no idea what I just said.
I don't want to break that down, okay, Steve?
Well, I think in a simple way, what he's saying is he's looking at what happens in the big picture, and now he's going to break it down and look at the little itty-bitty tiny microscopic reactions that are the basis of the whole problem.
You're exactly right, Ruth. You're exactly right. I watched a video of him earlier, and he discussed exactly that. He says sometimes in nature we have to look at big things,
right,
like a tree, and what, why is it to grow like that? And then he breaks it down into the branches and the leaves. So that's
he's
exactly
gonna
right.
He's going to talk about the intricacies, right,
yes.
Now.
Yes.
And at first maybe he has a wide audience, so us three would get it. And then he's going to have a much smaller audience where he talks about what the scientific studies and everything that only specialists will understand. Only people in his field will understand.
Those would probably be the only people who even had the vocabulary to understand what he was talking about.
Yes.
That's a good way of putting it, Ruth.
Well, the summary here on the last paragraph will be helpful. It says, ultimately, the research could help researchers better understand the brain and the variety of different neurological disorders. So this is a good step forward for research, for learning about the brain, for helping people who have brain disorders. So this is a good thing. Friends, we're out of time. I'm so sorry, but we have another lesson for you. So please join us next time here at Advanced for that. And until then, I hope all of you have a great day.